In our sustainability perspective series, complementing the Sustainability Awards 2020 and the Sustainable Packaging Summit, we're sharing interviews with thought leaders from across the packaging value chain. And I'm delighted to speak today with Erik Lindroth, who is Sustainability Director at Tetra Pak. Hi, Erik. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Tim. Yes, thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, let's get started then. A couple of weeks ago, you took part in the very first session of the Sustainable Packaging Summit in a panel discussion where we were addressing the fundamental definitions and aims of sustainability in packaging. Before we get into the specific challenges of aseptic cartons, I'd like you to maybe expand a bit on these basic principles. In the panel discussion, you made a really interesting argument, I thought, about widening our terms of reference beyond the normal ideas and the normal definitions we use of packaging sustainability. Could I ask you to expand on that a little bit?
Oh, right. Yes. I think we talked about, you know, sustainability as a concept. And there were a couple of things I think it's important to keep in mind. First of all, packaging as such is sort of a phenomenon in itself, but needs to be seen in a context. And here, I think it's so fundamental for all of us to understand that packaging has no existence or reason for existing on its own, but it's actually there to provide a service. And from that perspective, packaging, I think, is a bit of a weird product because it has a physical representation, but at the same time, it's more of a service, actually. And what it's a good package should take a food product from the place of production to the place of consumption. So to bridge that gap in time and distance, which is the sort of the greater role of packaging. And what I think we can see now, and in our industry, now during the COVID period here, I mean, the whole of 2020 has been a very weird experience in all senses of the word. But what we can see is that packaging has an instrumental role to play in securing food supply for us as individuals, as people, as citizens of our respective societies. And I think this is something which is so crucial that we tend to forget sometimes, that the package that we are producing and our customers are filling renders a service to us. And it needs to do so in an efficient way. And from that perspective, I think also when we talk about sustainability, it is also a reference to the wider concept of resilience, which has been discussed for many years, but not really caught on. At least I don't feel it has in the greater narrative of customer or corporate sustainability efforts. But I think that is about to change. Because the resilient system is at the service of human survival, I would say. And that we need to do in short and long term. And short term, of course, is to protect the food, to make sure that we get access to it. But longer term, to do so in a way that doesn't compromise the ability for future generations to live their lives. So I think in this space, that there's a lot of things happening, maybe on an academic level or philosophical level, but I think they will quickly manifest themselves in real change in our societies and therefore real change needed for us as companies. And we need to build into that narrative of how we play an important role of a resilient society. And that includes sustainability, but it's much far further reaching than the sustainability concept on its own, which tends to focus on the environmental impact, which will continue, of course, to be very, very important. But I think there are many other aspects and perspectives that need to go into this. So it's going to become a bit more complex, I think, but it's for the general good, because we're not really helping ourselves or society by taking a too short-minded or sort of limited view of what we need to do as companies, as individuals. So I think it's more, a lot of words, but... I think there is something here that is changing right now, and I think it's been brought about COVID has been like a catalyst in this, really propelling us into a new reality. We did a piece of work this summer on it. We called it the fastest decade in history. So, in many aspects, we're already in 2030, and the question is, once we get out of the COVID here now sometime early next year, hopefully. Will we go back to 2020 or do we stay in 2030? That is the big question. I think in many aspects, we do need to stay in 2030 in our behaviors and in our choices. So there's a lot of thinking, a lot of work that is required there in that space, I think.
Great. And what are the implications of this high level view for Tetra Pak itself? And I'm thinking in terms of the hopefully positive impacts that you can affect on sustainability and the broader holistic sense of the good of the world. And I suppose we can look at this throughout the product life cycle, and bearing in mind that Tetra Pak is a supplier of materials, but also of machinery, and you've got quite a holistic view of that whole value chain that you operate in. Where are the areas where you can impact positively throughout that life cycle?
Right. Thanks. That is a really, really good question, and something that we are grappling with on a daily basis. What we can see, and historically, the past, let's say, 3-4 years, the concept of the circular economy has really become mainstream, center stage, in not only in packaging, but I would say in every industry, which is great that you get a concept that people can agree on, that this is important. We need to provide an improvement for society in general, and we all need to build into that narrative and that way of thinking. However, what you say, Tim, is also true, that it's important to take a full life cycle perspective on this. And that's why when we talk about the circular economy, we try to be more precise and talk about the low carbon circular economy, meaning that it has to take the full life cycle view and not only the end of life focus, which is still today, unfortunately, frequently where we end up in the discussion. We end up talking about end of life collection, recycling as the only aspect for the circular economy to grapple with, which is true. I mean, it's a key central theme, but it's not the only theme. And we need to take the bigger life cycle perspective here too. I mean, from the start of life, what materials do we decide to employ as a packaging manufacturer? For us, that is an extremely important question. And then throughout the life cycle, during production and logistics and storage and whatnot, that this also has an impact. And you need to take the full life cycle view when taking decisions, because otherwise there is an evident risk that we're sub-optimizing, that we're taking decisions based on just part of the life cycle. If we're optimizing for recyclability only, we might end up with going in the wrong direction from a raw material choice perspective from the beginning. Of course, it needs to be recyclable as well. But for us, the raw material choice starts with us. I mean, the ambition we have is to move away from the fossil economy. So we want to maximize the use of plant-based renewable resources and move away from fossil plastics in this case, but also aluminium. So as a consequence, we've now moved into, we are continuously increasing our sales of plant-based solutions. So in Europe, the past 5 years, we've moved more than 30,000 tons of plastic from a fossil raw material to renewable plant-based. It's bioethanol from sugarcane instead of oil, which today is a direction that we need to go. I think we all agree that the climate topic and the climate challenge is the big one facing humankind. And we need to do everything we can to avoid the negative ramifications that we may see. And one of the core themes here is to move away from fossil raw materials, to leave them where they belong, and that is in the ground. And therefore, instead of taking things out of the ground, we need to take the raw materials from the ground, so grown somewhere, like wood used for paper or sugarcane or other plant-based materials to produce bioethanol.
Can I ask you there, what's the key technological challenge? I would guess that the replication of barrier properties in the substrate is the real roadblock there in terms of eliminating either aluminium or plastics from your composite materials.
No, absolutely. I mean, aluminium as such is a fantastic material. It is an absolute barrier for light, for microbes, for oxygen. So it protects the food very, very well. So coming back to the original purpose of the package is to protect the food product. So in that perspective, aluminium is difficult to beat. So therefore, when we look at alternatives, and we worked on this for many, many years, we need to find a substitute, an alternative that maintains a lot of the positive aspects of aluminium while being able to move in a plant-based direction. So that's something that we are working on, and where you need to find a barrier that has sufficient performance to allow you the long shelf life, or at least in that direction of aluminium. I mean, just to replace the barrier with something else is very easy to do, but then you will get quite a short shelf life. So we need to find something that works in the right direction, and that can be made from a renewable base as well. So this is advanced material development science, far beyond my competence. But I see the need and the interest from the company and from our customers to constantly move away from fossil materials and into more plant-based options. And I mean, from a business perspective, we see now a lot of customers across Europe switching to cartons from other packaging solutions, and especially from plastics, I would say, because by moving from a plastic bottle to a carton from us, you reduce the plastic use typically by 70-75%. So that is an important step, but it's not a sort of the final solution in any way. But it's a good direction. But then can you then complement that with more renewable plastics and following through the life cycle, efficient logistics inbound and outbound, long shelf life, easy storage, and rational production in the end as well for the customer. So not only the filling equipment, but we do sell a lot of processing equipment as well, which helps. I mean, that is the core of aseptic technology, is to have a sterilized product and a sterilized package that are brought together under sterile conditions. That is what renders it for long shelf life, up to a year, 2 years even sometimes. And then also towards the end, we need to work on collection and recycling. And this is something that we've worked on for decades already. And the performance in Europe is pretty decent, I would say. That there was a press release, was it last week, from ACE, our industry association in Brussels, stating that we now passed 50%. So it's now 51% collection and recycling rate in Europe, which I think it's pretty good, but it's not perfect. I mean, there is a lot of improvements needed there. But so the direction the past couple of years has been very positive. But we have ambitions far beyond that. And in the end, I think circular economy should make sure that no material goes to waste. It needs to come back into circulation, into new products of different kinds, which is key to take care of the end of life as well.
Thank you, Eric. And obviously, no single organization exists in a vacuum, and even a business the size of Tetra Pak isn't capable of changing the world unilaterally. How do you see the key roles of external stakeholders in facilitating this shift to more sustainable economy? And I mean, to take one example, you were talking about recyclability and recycling and collection, etc. And that's something where Tetra Pak can play a role, but you're massively reliant on waste management and municipalities, etc., to facilitate the demand and the collection, etc., in a very fragmented ecosystem.
That's absolutely true, Tim. We do, no company is operating in a vacuum, or nobody is an island, as it were. But we need to find those collaboration spaces and build from each other's strengths. And I think that partly that follows the life cycle as well. I mean, partnership with suppliers, partnership with colleagues in the company, with customers, retailers, consumers, and also collection organizations, municipalities, legislators, NGOs as well. So I think we need to, in order to be able to develop and deliver sustainable and increasingly sustainable solutions, we need to have an active interface with all those groups to understand what are the concerns today and in the future, and to understand that in good time so we can adapt our portfolio and our innovation decision making so we move in a direction where society think it's meaningful. But at the same time, it's important not to forget your own opinion in this or your own competence. So if you just follow what others tells you to do, you will waver back and forth like this. So you need to have a very clear sense of direction and to be open and honest with that. And I find that, for example, talking to legislators and NGOs, to be very clear on what we see as our purpose and what to see or what we see as a positive development from a sustainability perspective is very well appreciated. That it's not only about communication and pleasing others, but it's really about having a very, very key stake in the ground somewhere and say, this is where we need to go. Here are what we're doing right now, and here is what we will want to do in the future. And to have an open and honest dialogue around those decisions and also be prepared to change sometimes. So I think it's a matter of finding like-minded organizations, regardless of where this organization is operating. So, I mean, one example is in my home country here in Sweden, we worked with WWF for many years with a school program on recycling. So we've engaged, I think it's more than 250,000 kids now over the years in educating them around the benefits of recycling, that recycling is an important part of our responsibilities as citizens. We also have, I mean, on suppliers, but on the supply of raw materials, it's also important to make sure that we have certification schemes, for example, that are independent voices in establishing that these material choices are good choices. So, for example, FSC, the Forest Stewardship Council, we've worked with for years now, and all our carton that we use and supply is now FSC certified. So we've gone to 100% from the first steps back in 2007 when we were the first in the industry to introduce this. And similarly, earlier this year in March, we were the first to be able to offer also Bonsucre certified plant-based polymers. So an independent voice in the supply of bioethanol and that is done in a sustainable and responsible way. So I think it's a combination of different actors starting from a commonly agreed fact base that this is what we see, this is what this tells us in terms of importance and priorities, and then decide on, okay, how can we work together in making this come true? So, yeah, there are many, many examples of this. Recycling, as you mentioned as well, collection. You really need to work together and to fit into the society locally to be able to have collection system that works. And that is, you know, that's always local, you know, or at least geographically local from a country perspective. The collection of cartons in our case looks different from one country to another. And there we need to be present and active to make sure that the collection systems are there for us as citizens to be easy to use.
Thinking downstream in the value chain, your customers and the retailers as well, what sort of role do you see them playing in this collaborative process, and in what ways do you engage with those stakeholders?
Right. So, I mean, if we speak about our customers, so that is the food industry as such. I mean, they are the users of our products in the end. They are the ones taking a decision for a certain solution in our portfolio. So we need to be there and put the facts together. So say, okay, here are the reasons why this is a smart choice, and also enable them to communicate that to their stakeholders. And if we take collection and recycling as a specific case, actually, if you look at the producer responsibility as it's defined, the producer is the organization putting a product on the market for the final consumer. So we are not a producer in this, ironically enough, but our customers are the producers. But they are, again, the ones who choose between different materials and need to make sure that there is a collection and recycling system in place that is the sort of the heart of the produce responsibility legislation and the Packaging and Packaging Waste Directive, that all producers, all companies, all brands have a responsibility to make sure that their packages are also collected and turned into new valuable products. So, in this, I mean, we are really working closely together with our customers to discuss and enable them to take more sustainable choices, and also to be able to explain that to their stakeholders. I think it's become a core component in my job as sustainability responsible in Tetra Pak to work together with customers. And I think it's great. I think it's really about working together on possibilities and opportunities. So strong partnership feeling in that work, absolutely.
Thank you. And I know we've covered in Packaging Europe some of your work in partnership with the waste management sector, some interesting collaborations, I think, in Indonesia a couple of years ago. Is this also a sort of core driver of sustainability and particularly on the sort of technological frontier of recycling aseptic cartons?
Yes. If you look at a recycling system, I mean, there are basically four conditions that need to apply. First, you need a collection system, so it's possible to drop your packages somewhere. Secondly, you need a recycling system, so companies that take those packages and turn them into a new product. Thirdly, you need consumer communication and engagement. So we need to engage all of us as consumers to improve our collection and recycling. And finally, you need an end market for the recycled material so they can be turned into new products. And those four things need to be in place. If just one of those fail, there is, you know, no foundation for the collection and recycling system to work efficiently. So there we work, and then this is again coming back to the localization of sustainability work when it comes to collection and recycling. The gap in those four parameters will look different from one country to another. So we need to be prepared to engage in different types of questions depending on where we are. So if you look at Europe, for example, last year we presented a partnership with Veolia, for example, where we have now an agreement in place that will make the plastic and aluminium part of our packaging coming out of the paper mills, that all of that volume should be possible to recycle into new products. And there's a lot of new facilities coming on stream now this year in Germany and several other countries. So there is a positive development here. And there we have been an active partner, a bit of a catalyst in making sure that we connect the right type of organizations, because it's not really our job to recycle the packaging, but we have an interest in making sure that it happens. So we need to connect the right type of organizations to make sure that it happens and step in as a mediator and as a collaborator in this. But also when it comes to technical development, to be there to understand the, you know, from a material science perspective, what is happening around chemical recycling? How do you build an efficient way of separating materials or agglomerate plastic and aluminium into new products, things like this? So it's a host of different jobs that we are engaged in. And fortunately, we have a number of very professional colleagues in the company working on this. So, and from a specialist function. So I think we've seen some really positive strides and developments, but there remains a lot of work to be done for sure. So it's by no means we are through here. So we need to continue to work with this closely with other organizations and companies to make sure that recycling does happen in a good way.
Thank you, Eric. And well, we're nearly out of time now, so I'd like to ask you just one final question, which looks into the future. I would agree with you very much that over the critical decade that we're facing, we've got, you know, a strong obligation to make progress in fulfilling our circular economy goals at the same time as our carbon footprint reduction obligations. How would you view the future both for sustainability and in FMCG in general, and Tetra Pak's part in this story?
Right. Now, I think it's when I started working with sustainability 12, 13 years ago, it was one of those areas where, yeah, we need to talk about that as well. But yeah, let's see when I speak with customers and others. But today, sustainability is probably the first thing you start to discuss. So the past 10 years has seen a massive shift here. So today, it's not only business critical, but it's impossible to continue without a clear position when it comes to sustainability. And that goes for us, and that goes for our customers, and that goes for most companies today, I think. We have seen the importance of this also when we develop our direction for 2030 and our 2030 strategy. And we've set ourselves an ambition to continue to lead the sustainability transformation. I think we see a lot of positive development now in our portfolio and the sales of our products moving into increasingly more sustainable choices from our customers. And we want to continue that journey together with our customers. And that there, again, coming back to the low carbon circular economy, it's so important to have that integrated approach to see the full life cycle in this and be able to explain exactly where you are working up with this particular decision and how does that turn us into a positive force when it comes to driving towards sustainable production and consumption. So I think that the overall direction for us is to continue on the path where we are. But you know, it's like any sport. I mean, you're never better than your last game, so you need to continue to drive the capabilities and the competences in the company to make sure that we're able to stay at that cutting edge that where I think we are today. And here we have still a lot of work to do, but I think I feel that we're heading in a very clear direction with a lot of challenges for sure. But just to take, I mean, the Single-Use Plastics Directive on its own, I mean, has a huge impact on our industry and our customers. And we're making big investments now, I mean, switching from plastic straws to paper straws, leading the charge here, making sure that all our plastic caps are tethered, which is a massive investment both in innovation, but more importantly, in production capacity. So it's a complete revamp of our supply chain within a very short period of time. So huge challenges. But I, you know, I want to see sustainability not as a challenge and something difficult, but actually it is so inherently central in value creation today. For us as a company, for us as a brand, we need to see it as that. And I think we do, that we invest now in developing more sustainable solutions so that we and together with our customers can reap the profits in the future. I think that is the more enabling way to see it, that it's fundamentally about creating value for us as a company, but creating value for our customers and society in general. That becomes a more enabling framework to work from, I think.
I think that's a really inspiring note to end on. Indeed, that is all we have time for today. We will be hearing more from Tetra Pak and other sustainability pioneers and thought leaders over the coming weeks in our season of virtual Sustainable Packaging Summit panels, workshops, etc. We'll also have a networking session with Tetra Pak in the coming weeks. To take part in any of those upcoming live sessions or to watch them on demand, you can register for free at packagingsummit.earth/join. And you're very welcome to join us and participate. That's all we have now. So thanks very much, Erik Lindroth, for joining me today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Thanks, Tim.